Happy New Year, aliens, ghosts, and robots. Hey, yes, this is Keith, and yes, at the time of this recording, it is the new year. And as a friend of mine suggested to me, we need to turn happy into a verb. Go happy this new year. Be the one who makes it happy. A lot of good stuff has happened here at the end of the year. Our audio drama, The Love Talker, has just won Best Thriller at the Hollywood Series Awards. We're very, very grateful for that and honored to be included among such amazing talent. And if you're into folk horror and want to listen, check it out at thelovetalker.com. We're wrapping production on the 25th and final episode of An Invisible Sun, which means there's only a few episodes left to the end of this story. After this, we plan on rolling out an ebook and audiobook version of this podcast, and I hope you'll stay in touch so you can check those out. And if you missed it, the Winter Solstice edition of Equinox Anthology is out, and it's an amazing batch of short sci-fi stories. Look for Equinox Anthology on your favorite podcatcher to listen. And of course, we want Equinox to continue. So if you are an audio drama creator and would like to see your story in a future Equinox, we'd love for you to pitch an idea to us. Go to alienghostrobot.com/Equinox for more information. So here's today's episode. Once again, thank you all for listening. And let's go happy that new year together. An Invisible Sun by W. Keith Timms. Chapter 22. Navigating through Marley was baffling enough, but the flickering alarm lights, the sounds of chaos, and occasional brownouts made it terrifying. But we made progress. We passed through the hydroponics bay I remembered from earlier, and the noise of fighting was getting louder. Either we were getting closer to it, or it was coming to us. Catherine was still unconscious, and Sister Lucy still bore her on her shoulder. Somewhere ahead, I heard the soft pop and whoosh of what I assumed was accelerator rifle fire. I wasn't exactly sure how these weapons worked. They were designed for fighting in microgravity, with self-propelled ammunition to reduce recoil and bullets that could punch through flesh, but usually broke up when they hit anything harder to avoid breaching a hull. Usually. We dropped into a corridor that led to the central chamber we first came into, with the giant fighting cage and the market stalls. Flashes of light strobed through a window in the hatch, and the station vibrated around us. The fighting had reached the heart of Marley Station.
The ship is through there, but that's where they're fighting. Is there another way to get to the ship? I don't think so. Then we go in. What? Do you know which hatch to take once we're inside? Yes.
But all I really had was a guess. In the huge sphere, everywhere is up and down. And it would have only been the second time I'd been in it.
All right. You lead us to the hatch. Stay low. Move fast. Do not stop.
The doorway thrummed with the sound of combat on the other side. Shouting. Gunfire. The room was full of death. And we were going to run into it. I put a hand on Matthew's satchel to reassure myself that the eye was still there. And I spun open the hatch. Smoke rolled out as soon as it opened. The huge chamber boils with strife. The Shayad operatives in black body armor, armed with wicked machete-like blades and carbines, were at the top of the room, pouring down occasional fire and leaping behind the cover of tables and countertops. The Marleyans were pushing up from the bottom of the room, holding fighting batons, links of pipe, knives, and heavy tools. The miners twisted and danced through the air, yelling savagely, pulling the enemy out of cover and fighting them hand to hand. A bullet struck the wall a few feet from me, trailing a thin plume of propellant and exploding into hot powder that singes my face and eyes. blobs of fire were spreading from the cooking stations into the room. The stench of burning plastic stung my lungs. Dead bodies on both sides drifted through the air, leaking blood in quivering, floating trails.
Christopher! Go!
I rushed past a couple of tables, trying to keep low and using them as cover against the Shayot fighters above us. I had never felt more vulnerable, as it seemed bullets were literally raining down on us. The fighting cage stood empty. The whole room was the cage now. A Marlian in a stained tank top, his powerful arms shining with sweat, yanked a soldier away from the wall and slammed him into the cage with a rattling crash before jamming a knife into his side between the plates of his armor. Another Marlian twirled through the air, grappling with an enemy, using his fighting baton to disarm the other man. The miners fought with such ferocity, eyes blazing, teeth bared. Perhaps that is what they have, instead of armor and guns. But a Marlian in green coveralls cried out, bloody holes appearing in his chest and neck, and thumped against the floor in front of me and bounced away, limp. The man who disarmed the Shayot soldier a moment ago was overpowered by his enemy, who sliced open his throat with his boarding blade, sending a spray of gore through the fighting cage. Marlians had advantage in the low gravity. There were more of them, too. But the guns were cutting them down faster than they can fight back. This is not a fight they can win. We reached the passage leading to the ship just as a conduit above us ruptured and sprayed white vapor into the air, covering us in freezing fog. I looked back and Lucy was just behind me, still carrying Catherine. I got the hatch open and held it for her. Awkwardly, she wrangled herself and Catherine through and started descending, and I was right behind her, closing the hatch. I was panting and trembling with adrenaline. The sound of furious destruction vibrated the tube as we went down to the ship, opened the airlock, and got inside. Lucy carried Catherine to the flight deck while I sealed up the airlock again. I found the locking mechanism and set it, but I didn't think it would hold off Shayot for long, should they reach it. Lucy had placed Catherine in the co-pilot's chair. Catherine's face is pale and streaked with grime and blood, but she was breathing and moving fitfully. Lucy had found a first aid kit and was pulling out rolled bandages.
Do you know anything about how to fly? No.
She started securing Catherine's arm in an improvised sling. Her attention to her task seemed automatic, like she wasn't really paying attention. She seemed fractured somehow, her mind in many places, but rarely the here and now.
Okay. How about the comms? Do you know anything about them?
She blinked at me uncertainly, like she'd forgotten where she was. But then she nodded and pointed to a panel in the center console.
There should be a headset. Power is there. It should be tuned to whatever frequency was used last. That ought to be the station.
I dropped into the pilot's seat. The adrenaline was wearing off. My muscles were trembling, and though I tried, I couldn't make them stop. Felt like I might vomit. But I swallowed all that down and picked up the headset, put it on my ears. Maybe there would be time to be sick and terrified later.
Marley Station, come in. Marley Station, this is Christopher and Sister Lucy. Are you there? Oliver, are you there?
Lucy was tying off the bandages with practiced precision, leaving Catherine's arm held secure against her body. Using a syringe from the medkit, she injected Catherine with something. Painkiller, I assumed. Or antibiotics.
Marley Station, this is...
Christopher! Where are you? Did you make it?
Yes, we made it. We're in the ship. What's going on inside?
Everything's fallen to pieces down here. Too many people have died. They're going to be on us soon. Baptiste has been contacting the miners outside the station, out in space. He has some sort of plan. Reinforcements or something. There's a runabout coming to get us out of here. But who knows if they'll reach us in time.
Is it ready?
Christ, I don't know, Lucy. I mean, maybe? They hadn't finished installing all the power regulators. I'm getting the software going now, but even if we do...
Just get it ready and send it out.
Did you get your pilot sorted?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Let me go do a few things while I can.
The line fell silent, and I looked at Lucy, who had closed her eyes and seemed to be praying, leaning forward and holding her head. Her strong, lined hands framed her face. Her shoulders hung heavy. Wisps of her salt and pepper hair drifted free of her ponytail.
So, what is it?
She barely opened her eyes.
The Invisible Sun had two major projects, both of which revolved around finding evidence to prove Shayot's role in the Gate Plague. The first you already know about, our attempt to find physical evidence of the angels, which seem tied to the gates somehow. What is the connection between them? We still don't fully understand, but surely you have noticed that only those who are the sickest with the plague hear and see the angels. The plague somehow changes people as it kills them, alters their perceptions. It could be something to do with the radiation affecting the nervous system, or concentrating in the body's tissues, we don't know. But it simply means that to see the angels, you must die.
It occurred to me that I never did hear back about that blood test. But what else could be wrong with me?
So that's why I could see the eye. Yes. The second project has been going on for years with the help of Marley Station. Aubrey Barwise was a Starliner pilot.
Yes, you told me earlier.
He left Shayot when he became sick. But before he did, he managed to steal some heavily encrypted files from Shayot's systems. Oliver was instrumental in decoding them. He brought us engineering documents, scientific notes, internal discussions, and, most significantly, a list of all the locations and coordinates of all the gates in the solar system.
But I thought all the gates were public knowledge. I mean, at least their general location, if not their specific coordinates.
Yes, except for one gate, which no one knows about.
A secret gate.
Where is it? Somewhere between Neptune and the Kuiper Belt.
That would mean a place in the middle of the nothing, beyond the last planet, before the cloud of debris that roughly marks the boundary of our solar system. It would take years of conventional travel, decades even, to reach.
What we have pieced together is that about 45 years ago, the company that became Shayot discovered some sort of normally undetectable radiation, probably on Mars, because for some reason there seems to be a lot of this sort of activity on Mars at certain times of the year. In any case, this discovery led them further to find something far out at the edge of our solar system, something they called the Invisible Sun in private documents. They mounted a multi-year expedition in secret to this place, built a research facility there, and their studies led to the development of the Twine Drive. They built the first gates, one at Earth, the other at the Moon, as a public test. But before those, they built a gate at this secret spot, the home of their discovery. And that gate is still there.
So the secret of Twine Drive is out there. And if you could somehow get there,
we could draw a definitive connection between the gates, the radiation, and the plague. And perhaps also the Eye and the angels.
But how would you get there? A conventional ship would take years.
6.5 years if launched from Jupiter at its closest orbital window. We considered it, but there is no time, and the amount of resources to sustain even a small crew for that long is beyond our grasp. We must use the gates, toxic as they are.
But no Shayot gate would ever allow you to travel to this secret hideout.
True. So we built our own.
The sheer audacity of the idea. They built their own gate here at Marley Station. The mining operation would be an excellent cover and could funnel needed resources to its construction. The profits from their ore sales would help fund the project as well. All they would need is the expertise to do it.
Does that mean you learned how Twine Drive works?
No. All we have been able to do is recreate the technology. We tried to understand it, but we do not have the personnel or time. We designed it on a much smaller scale and built our own versions of the machinery from the plans stolen from Shayot. But we do not know how it works.
No one does.
It was Catherine in the co-pilot's chair. Her eyes lifted open slowly. The cut I gave her on her forehead radiated out an ugly bruise, and she winced as she shifted in the chair. I felt myself bracing for a fight, but I don't think Catherine was in much of a position to try anything.
It's a big joke around the gate ports. Pilots, techs, programmers, they all play this drinking game where they try to invent the most outrageous reasons for how Twine Drive works. It's a cosmic sneeze. Or the ship is flung by a giant rubber band. Or it's hitchhiking on the butt of an invisible space squid. They laugh. But it's because they don't know. And I don't think anyone knows. Not even the geniuses that invented it. I mean, look at the name. Twine Drive. What does that even mean? I think they made it up to sound good.
Sister Lucy turned away suddenly, busying herself unnecessarily with putting away the first aid kit. Catherine caught me studying her face and smirked.
What? You killed Matthew. He gave me no choice. He was going to kill people. I know some of those guys.
She flexed the fingers of her left hand experimentally, flinching at the pain. Her arm was badly swollen.
I did try to stop him first. You betrayed us. You betrayed me. Lied to me. Yes, I did. But I tried to warn you, too. I tried to talk you out of this. All of you. Now people are dying. Don't lay that at my feet.
People are dying all over the solar system because of Shayot.
Oh, no, not this again.
She rolled her eyes. But there was something more there. A flicker of doubt. She could not immediately discount the idea anymore after what she'd seen. I remembered feeling that way myself.
It's the truth. The company you work for has poisoned millions, kidnapped and killed thousands, all to protect its dirty secrets. Now it has attacked a station, an act of war that
no one will do anything about. You people don't get it. There is no way for you to win. Every government in the solar system bends over backwards to accommodate Shayot. No company would ever challenge them in the markets, because without the gates, the whole system falls apart. No commerce, no manufacturing, no fuel, no water. The world is hanging on by a thread, and if we lose the gates, it's the end. Does that justify killing my friend, Evan?
I was a little surprised at how calm I felt. But that was because I knew what I had to do next.
Look, I don't know anything about that. I wasn't part of that operation. They didn't brief me on it. But Shayot must fight terrorists who...
Am I a terrorist?
Look, Christopher, I told you. This isn't you.
What isn't?
You're not like these people. Not like her. Did she tell you how she funded this little cell of hers? How she was excommunicated for stealing money from the poor?
Lucy visibly flinched.
The mission I took the money from was a fraud. Almost none of it went to actually help the poor.
Yeah, it's a good story. Robbing from your own church to fund a terrorist group with ex-special forces, cyber criminals, conspiracy nuts.
We are not a...
All right, Lucy, I think it's ready. As ready as it's going to be. We... They're here. Look, I'm going to launch it, but you need to tell me where to point it.
Point it at Earth or Mars. Let's get the eye out of here.
We cannot. The gates there must be set to pull us out of Twine Drive. Shayot is likely freezing all traffic through the gates. We would just keep flying until the energy wave collapsed, and we would tear ourselves apart re-entering normal space.
So, where are we going?
Point it at the first gate.
The secret gate? How is that any different?
That gate is smaller, simpler, built quickly and with limited resources. The information we found suggests that the whole place is now automated and only occasionally staffed because of the risk of the plague. We think this gate is automated, too. If we align correctly, it should work. Should.
Everything we have risked and done in the past days has come to a precipice of shoulds and maybes.
You realize there are no booster gates between here and there.
I know.
You realize how much smaller both our gate and the destination gate are. How precise we'll have to be. If you miss...
I know. You will not miss.
But she was quietly rubbing the gold crucifix around her neck between her finger and thumb.
And you realize that if they've changed the codes we have...
Yes, Oliver, yes. If... I know. But this is our only chance to see. Our only chance to touch upon what we've been seeking all these years. We have our tasks. This is ours. You must escape with Baptiste and the others. Regroup. Fight off Shayot. Prepare for what comes next.
And how are we supposed to do that?
Have faith. You have Baptiste and the remaining Marlians. They have resources. You will find a way. Tell everyone what happened. If we do not return, the Invisible Sun is in your hands.
God damn it all. Good luck, sister.
Down along the far side of the asteroid into which Marley Station was built, a patterned ring of charges went off, sending plumes of debris shooting into space like geysers. A domed section of the asteroid lifted away like the shell of an egg or the rind of a piece of fruit, pushed by tiny engines to tumble away into space in a torrent of dust. Almost immediately afterwards, rolling sedately from out of the heart of the asteroid, came a gate. Well, it looked something like a gate. The Shayot gates are vast, shining, brass and silver, ominous and awe-inspiring, like works of art as much as machines. This gate resembled the station that built it. Circular, yes, but covered with a rough mishmash of machinery, cables and conduits spreading haphazardly over its dull metal surface. And it's so small. Shayot gates are kilometers across. This one cannot even fit a starliner through it, let alone a freighter. This was our escape, our hope, and our answer. A hastily assembled ring of salvage and scrap, gliding away from Marley Station in a cloud of pulverized rock, and slowly orienting itself in space to some point far away.
All right. Catherine, take us in.
What?
You're the only one here who knows how to fly this ship and to operate Trine Drive. I need you to fly us into the ring.
And why would I do that?
Because this isn't you.
What?
This isn't you working for Shayot, turning a blind eye to what's happening, pretending like you don't care. Believing the things Shayot told you, ignoring the things you've seen since you've been with me. It's not you.
What do you know about me? Nothing. Only what I've let you think about me.
Yes, you fooled me pretty good. You were a very convincing friend. In fact, I missed that Catherine a lot.
I had a lot of help. The psychologists working for Shayot put together a profile for me that they thought you'd respond to.
How easily they manipulated me. How quickly they surmised I was so needy I would latch onto a stranger who showed me a little kindness. And how they even knew enough about me to put those things together in the first place was concerning. But again, there was no time for this.
Well, it's true. I don't know you. I only know some of the things about you. Even if what I saw was an act, I know you have a great sense of humor, which is something you can't fake, that you can be kind and compassionate when you want to be. You're also pretty and perceptive, and you seem so at ease in your own skin. You have all the things I wish I had in me, which is probably why I liked you so much.
Under her pain and fatigue, I could see some little bits of remorse. Maybe. Or at least, traces of empathy in her eyes, if it isn't another act.
I also know that you're dangerous, that you can be violent and deadly, and that you're a gifted liar and manipulator when you want to be. But you also tried to get me to stop, to give up this insanity, as you called it, which shows me that you aren't simply a thoughtless enforcer for Shayad. That even though you have killed, you aren't a killer. He was going to throw a bomb at... Yes, I know. Matthew was like you in that he too may have killed, but I don't believe he was a killer. I didn't know him very well either, but I could see that he took responsibility for his actions. He went out of his way to find non-violent ways to reach his goals. He made his own choices, just like you do. You didn't have to try to convince me to give up and go home. You chose to. You could have killed Matthew at any point once Shayot was in the station. He was your biggest threat, I imagine. It would have been a smart move. But you waited until you had no other choice that you could see. You choose, which is why you're going to choose to help us now by flying this ship through the gate. But that makes no sense. I'm not going to become a criminal. I'm not going to help you escape from my employers. And assuming all these conspiracy theories this ex-sister is feeding you are true, why would I want to help you tear down the only thing holding society together?
Outside of the cockpit, the ramshackle gate had finished its slow, balletic arc and had come to rest in space, pointed at some tiny spot in the middle of nothingness, farther away than my mind can comprehend. I felt a trickle of wetness running down my chest. I touched it, and my fingers came back bloodied. Another lesion had opened on my shoulder. I smeared the dark red fluid over my fingertips, and Catherine looked at the stain with concern. But better than that, doubt.
You'll do it because you want to know. What? Know what? The truth. Or a truth. Or an answer. Or something like an answer, which is better than no answer at all.
I pressed my fingers against the torn skin to try to stop the bleeding.
It hurts that you lied to me and used me, but that's as much my own foolishness as anything else. In a way, I understand. It's a hard thing that you killed Matthew, but I can try to forgive you because I know you felt you had to. You did what you thought was right at the time. I don't know that I can ever forgive Shayot for taking my best friend from me. That hurts me more than them giving me the plague. But I don't blame you for that, even though you're a part of them, an instrument of their will.
She looked away from us, out of the window. She didn't want to look at us. She was retreating. I know all about that. There was a flash of light from somewhere down on the station as another compartment explosively decompressed and bits of metal pattered on the hull of our ship like rain. Sister Lucy was sitting behind us, eyes closed, praying silently. I think it was a prayer. Perhaps she was waiting for the end.
When you were a little girl, did you dream of being a corporate agent?
She turned away further, annoyed and struggling, but I pressed on.
Because I certainly didn't imagine myself as a washed-out academic, passionlessly reciting history to people who didn't care. I mean, whose life ends up being just like they expect it to be? I could blame a lot of things for how I ended up. Isolated, lonely, afraid of the world. But ultimately, I have to blame myself. Because I, like you, was just doing what I thought was right at the time. Even if I couldn't see how wrong it was. Why did you try to save me? Why did you try to talk me out of going along with the Invisible Sun? Because you didn't know what you were getting yourself into. And there was hope for you.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. In your time with us, you have seen things you can't explain. Things which don't line up with Shayot's official position, haven't you? The sickness in Mr. Barwise and in me. How these people, Sister Lucy, Oliver, Matthew, didn't act like terrorists and resisted using violence except when they had no other choice. The eye, which, even if you can't see it, you know is something special, something Shayot is willing to blow up a space station to possess. Doubt. And I know the doubt is there because the things you've done, the things you've had to do, they aren't you. Christopher, just stop. It's what you see. You can make the doubt go away. Fly us through the gate. Either there's nothing there, and we're criminals, and you are completely justified, or there's proof of the most amazing and horrifying truth we have ever witnessed. Don't you want to know?
She cradled her broken arm, head bowed in pain. The fingers on her good hand twitched nervously.
They'll never forgive me. Tell them we held a gun to your head. Threatened your life, your family, anything. Lay all the blame on us. You mean you aren't threatening me? Would it do any good? No.
She said that with a tiny smirk, and she looked like herself again just for that moment. At least, the Catherine that she was for me.
Right. But there's no threats here anyway. Just a choice. It's the only thing that really belongs to any of us. And this is yours.
I didn't know what else to say to her, and I was exhausted. I had nothing left. I fell back into the seat and wiped at my sweaty brow with my grimy, blood-stained hand.
Lucy? Christopher? Are you there? You have to go!
Where are you?
We got out on a runabout, but Shayad is already in the chapel. They're going to shut down the control systems. They've also launched their ship, the one they came in. It's heading towards you. It's a gunship. It's got missiles. There's no more time.
Catherine reached out with her good hand and touched some controls on the co-pilot's panel. The docking clamps slammed open, and the ship drifted away from the station. She hit a few more buttons, and the ship's engines roared to life. We lurched forward, moving fast toward the floating ring.
I can't do this with one hand. Christopher, you'll need to power up the twine drive and angle the skids. The controls are on your right. I'll talk you through it.
I did what she told me. She aligned the ship's trajectory with the gate. I hit a button here, slid a control line there. Displays threw out complicated numbers and graphs I didn't understand. But I didn't need to understand it. I just needed it to work. The ship accelerated and banked, Catherine's one-handed flying making our path messy and inelegant. The starfield swirled past the window until we're finally facing the ramshackle ring and racing toward it.
Agony 1. Return to the station and power down or be destroyed. This is your only warning.
Catherine's face was stoic, focused, making last-minute adjustments, feeding them to the ship's computer. Alarmingly, the gate ahead of us was spitting little sparks from some of the machinery that lined its surface, but it was much too late to stop now. The ring vanished past the cockpit window as we flew into its center. We jolted. Violet light burned through us. And we were gone. An Invisible Sun is written, produced, performed, and composed by W. Keith Timms, and is a production of Alien Ghost Robot Creative Media. If you're enjoying the story, please tell your friends and family about it, and leave stars or reviews on your favorite podcast platforms. I hope you'll join us on our Discord server, or sign up for our mailing list so we can stay in touch. Members of our Patreon get to hear future episodes early, plus other cool perks for all our shows. Go to InvisibleSunPod.com for more information.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.